The Halfway House. A very perceptible straightening up of the driver's spinal column, the whole spelling book full of letter S's in the air made by the long whiplash, an extra dash of the horses, and we were brought up standing in front of the halfway house.
5 minutes for refreshments, said the driver,
mentally charging Brown the price of a cigar, which Bill is always honored when presented at the counter. George Brown, the smiling landlord, approached, rubbing his hands gleefully.
"Step out, gentlemen," said he. "Plenty of time while the horses are being watered. Get your ladies up a nice lemonade, milk punch, or anything you want."
Some of us took the lemonade plain, some with a stick in it, and some took the stick plain. George is noted for his lemonades, with or without lemons.
"What next, gentlemen?"
said he as he poured the last glass out of the shiny tin shaker and wiped the honest sweat from his brow. Jack was very solemn as he said in his most impressive style,
"A glass of water, if you please, landlord."
"Certainly, certainly, right this way,"
briskly seizing hold of the ice pitcher.
"I declare, I believe the ice is all out," said he, shaking it, "and I guess the water is a little warm, but I've got some first-rate pop on ice."
Of course, the pop was ordered, but Jack says the normal condition of that pitcher is to be without ice about stage time. The halfway house, 4 miles from the lake near Williams Monument, boasts of a cabinet of Indian curiosities and relics picked up on the old battlegrounds nearby a pond, where good pickerel fishing is found, and especially noted for the game suppers, which nobody seemed to know how to get up like Brown, and without which no season or ride in that direction is considered complete. We examined the Indian relics, then went out on the porch and sat down in one of the great armchairs. A woman was crossing the road toward the barn, carrying something in a pail. Running ahead, around on every side, of every size, age, and color to be found in the extensive family, was a drove of about 30 cats. And they allowed it wasn't much of a day for cats either. An aldermanic dog, in shape closely resembling a roll of butter, waddled out and appeared as tickled to see us as it was possible to express with his excessively abbreviated narrative. Birds chirped and twittered contentedly in their cages on the flower-crowded porch, and in short, everything seemed so comfortable and well-fed that we decided unanimously that George Brown knew how to keep a hotel. Our timid friend was greatly interested in the flowers, smelled around until he got a bug in his nose, and then in his frantic efforts to get it out, knocked over a vase of fuchsias, stepped on the fat dog, and finally sat down on a very fine specimen of the cactus family. He didn't stay long, didn't take much thought as to his manner of going, but went.
"All aboard," sang the driver.
So aboard we all got, and away we went, bowing low as we passed through the old red toll gate just north of the house. From Brown's northward, the road follows along the west side of a thickly wooded ravine, nearly midway between the top and bottom, winding in and out as the sides project or recedes from the center. And this constant turning seems to excite such a spirit of emulation in the horses that they need no urging, but go along at a swinging pace, revealing a constantly changing panorama of beauty. New objects coming into sight, sweet little bits of foreground and lovely vistas opening up to surprise and charm the eye that sparkles with excitement and watches eagerly as each new picture is unfolded, until a sudden bend in the road brings us in sight of a sign bearing the inscription of Williams Monument. The apple tree to which the sign was attached appeared venerable enough, but did not answer to our idea of a monument. Where is it?
Up there among the bushes on the side hill, said the driver, jerking his head over the left shoulder.
Looking, we saw a plain marble shaft, perhaps 8 feet in height, white, clouded with blue, and standing on a huge boulder. What a lonesome place to be buried in.
Awful pokey, I think, don't you?
Said the young ladies, appealing to the knobby young man who admitted that it was very hawid.
I say, driver, what was William What's-His-Name's object in locating in this outlandish place?
Inquired Jack innocently.
I guess he didn't have much to say about it, one way or t'other, said the driver. He was a colonel or something, and fell by that R rock.
Good gracious! Did it hurt him much?
Asked the astonished Jack. Then, as the driver deigned no reply, save a look of pity for one so totally deficient in a knowledge of history, he concluded philosophically,
I suppose it must, though, for that's a pretty high stun to fall off of.
Tee-hee,
remarked the young ladies. Our young college friend seemed on the point of bursting with suppressed knowledge when a judicious question from the fond mother opened the gates, and we were flooded with information.